Have you heard of travelers? In late December 2010, 8 young people died in a warehouse fire in New Orleans, a tragedy, and one that exposed a lifestyle unknown to a lot of Americans, but well known to our next guests. It's the life of the traveler. These are young kids who leave their homes, sometimes crawling out a window with just a packed garbage bag over their shoulder. They hop freight trains, squat in abandoned buildings, skateboard on rooftops, create community through Twitter and Facebook and fellow travelers, and many of them leave behind families that really love them. That warehouse in New Orleans was one of their squats or homes. Journalist Danielle Morton takes us inside this world in a fascinating article in the Boston Review. She joins us from KQED in San Francisco. Danielle, welcome. And by way of bringing in our next guest, you've got a very personal connection to this world.
I didn't know much about this world either until my daughter, Marissa, decided to join them. She dropped out of college and hit the road.
And Marissa is also with us on the line from San Diego. Marissa, are you there?
Yeah.
Marissa, let's start with you. Why? Why take up this life? Why scare your mom? You know, because you know you did. What pulled you towards it?
I was pulled towards some sort of adventure. I guess I had just connected to it in high school. I had some friends who had said that they had rode trains and had a great time. But I was more drawn to the music aspect of it. A lot of my friends play music on the street, like busking, and I was really into that. I was really into Woody Guthrie at the time, too. So I guess before I went to college, I had hooked up with a couple of people and hitchhiked around and played music on the street. I had kind of a failed train riding attempt. And when I went back to college, I had even had friends who would call me, and I'd board them up in my dorm room because they were traveling, too.
I have to ask you, Marissa, you say failed train riding attempt. Why? What happened?
Oh, I just tried to get on and got chased.
Oh, at least it wasn't, you know, getting your hands run over, which, you know, your mom writes about one of the travelers who had some of his fingers severed. But we certainly have known this life existed. We actually booked a traveler once on the air, but he didn't show up, you know, because it's kind of an ephemeral thing. You're not usually in one place for a long time. But I guess, Mom, you know, Marissa's explained what the pull was, but some listeners might be saying, well, wait a second, isn't the better question, why did you let her go?
There is nothing
How can you?
I was already gone.
What can you do? I mean, you know, my daughter called me and said she was thinking of dropping out of school, but she already had done so. I mean, she was committed to this already, and what could you do? Stand, if you could find the van that she was going to get in and drive out of town, what would you do, stand in front of it? You know, I mean, even though we had some pretty heated phone conversations during the 2 days where I thought she hadn't yet dropped out of school, at the end of the day, it is her decision. It is her life.
In fact, you write about another mom you met whose daughter would hop out the window and go off to whatever her adventures were, and so the mom thought she would force a confrontation by locking the window, and instead her daughter just left.
Yeah.
I don't feel like people should be contained like an animal. I mean, if I'm of age, I should be able to make my own decisions. I felt a little bit dulled artistically at that school, and I felt really inspired by a countrywide music tour that I was about to embark on, and I've had a lot of guilt for what my parents were going through because they were worried, but I kind of acted on impulse out of arrogance.
Well, but you make it clear, Marissa, we can hear, you weren't running from them. You were running towards something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a career decision.
But from a parent's point of view, you do think, and I did think, that she was rejecting me, even though actually she told me several times that I had nothing to do with this decision, which for a parent also is a form of rejection.
Well, in fact, you write one of the great lines, Danielle, the radical freedom of my daughter imprisoned me. You know, what a great way of describing these invisible ties between loved ones. You know, what is for someone a wonderfully reckless, exciting journey is for the one sitting at home, as you said, imprisonment, fear, worry.
You know, my daughter is a very intelligent, talented individual, but the thing that I was worried most was not that, about her wits or her skills, but about just the danger of this world. Mm-hmm. I'm a journalist, so when she stepped off into that world, I started looking into it just to see what kind of life she would be leading. And then I had to stop because I just thought, I can't look any further, which is why this story was a coming together for my daughter and me, because we went to New Orleans together to look into how these eight people got into this squat on that night and what forces drew them onto the rails. And the other question I wanted to know was I an outlier among those eight sets of parents of those kids, or were there others like me? Because previous to my daughter leaving, I thought when I saw these people on the streets that they must be, you know, young bums who are old bums to be, and I had a contempt for them. But then once my daughter joined them, I had to look at them in a different way. So I did, and the story really helped me do that.
Let's talk about that. Marissa, did you know some of the young travelers, as they're called, who died in the warehouse fire?
I knew one of the girls as a friend of a friend, but I never met her.
But you knew of this kind of a life. You knew of this kind of a building. They exist in other cities as well. You both went to the burned out building together. Marissa, what did you think when you saw it?
It's extremely tragic. It was a big blow to the community. I could see how sad and how deeply affected the community of New Orleans was by it.
And Mom, Danielle?
There was a memorial board, a plank that was put in the ground, and it said, for the kids, and around it were the heaped little Veladora candles and the charred dog backpacks. And Marissa and her friend Izzy and I were standing there. We kind of held each other for a while, and it was just kind of a moment of silence for the eight people who died. I had many times imagined that Marissa would end up in a squat fire because, as the New Orleans Fire Department said, there's so many things in a space like that that you don't know anything about. The floorboards of this warehouse had been soaked, were old railroad ties that had been soaked in creosote, which is flammable, and there's kind of no way to know that if you're just passing through.
Well, and the kids had a fire, sort of like one of those outdoor fires, but they'd brought it indoors, and so
they had carved a piece out and put the fire barrel in it and then clad the edges of it with metal that they'd scavenged from some of the abandoned buildings in the area. But so not to know that kind of basic issue of fire safety there, which is that the metal cladding heats the floorboards, makes them highly flammable, so that if there's a spark, of course you're not supposed to have a fire indoors anyway, but if there's a spark, then the whole place would burn down. And so I had that feeling of connection to the sorrow of the kids, and also I felt about the parents who probably had the same yearnings that I had and feeling of a tragic separation of their children, many of them, and they didn't know how dangerous this life could be. And this was standing in the ashes of it, you know, standing in the worst possible outcome. That was really very hard to handle.
That's Danielle Morton. Her article about that New Orleans warehouse fire that killed eight young people, known as travelers, is in the Boston Review. We'll link you at herenow.org. Her daughter Marissa lived the life, but it was also a joyous one, riding atop grainers in Alabama, squatting in a well-known to travelers seven-story abandoned apartment building in Philly. She says it was awesome. All the travelers got an apartment. But when we come back, more of the downside here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to our conversation with journalist Danielle Morton and her daughter Marissa Spohr. Together they traveled to New Orleans to find out more about a warehouse fire that killed eight young people who were travelers. These are kids who leave home, hop freight trains, live in abandoned buildings, just like Marissa once did. Newcomers are called oogles. They're shown the most stable squats, places to live, the most plentiful dumpsters. Kids sort of adopt each other as siblings. And New Orleans is a mecca for them because there are more than 40,000 abandoned residential properties there. And homelessness, for many of these kids, is a choice. Marissa is a musician who dropped out of college to become a traveler, busking on the streets of New Orleans, and then ultimately taking her mom, Danielle, to the scene of the fire and into the life. And Danielle, before the break, you were telling us about visiting, you know, this awful scene where this fire was, and thinking about the parents who died there. You ultimately talked to many of these parents, and many wanted you to know these were good, happy, well-loved kids, just free spirits that couldn't be contained. But there were also problems.
I would say that if you were to do a sort of, like, I'm a sociologist view of this, you would say that many of the kids come from a very high-conflict divorce family. Many of them have substance abuse and mental health issues in their previous generations. Several of them had learning disabilities, and while they were quite smart and very sensitive, the school setting never worked for them. They couldn't sit still long enough. Their minds were too free-ranging. And so this combination of factors and with an exquisite artistic sensibility meant that they had a pull towards something that was grander and bigger than was available through the sort of steady progress on a career path with education and that kind of thing. They had a need for something dramatic and authentic, I think is the word that they would use, wouldn't you, Marissa?
Yeah, I would say that's about right.
Yeah, many seemed, in the reading, Marissa, many seemed like you. They just had the need to jump out the window, you know, to jump out an open window to see what was on the other side.
Yeah, I would definitely relate to that. I mean, as soon as that band showed up and said that they were playing my songs and that I could go on tour, I got all my stuff in a garbage bag and left it in my friend's attic and got in a van and went to New Orleans.
I'm wondering, Marissa, I know people busked, they panhandled, they learned how to ride these very high bicycles that we've seen around where, you know, you weld the seat high up and that became a sort of a part of it too, like a performance art kind of thing. But were there moments when you just hated it, like, I'm cold, I'm tired, this warehouse is dirty, you know, were there times when it
Yeah, of course. If I was in a really awful situation, I'd usually have the mindset that tomorrow was another day and it was going to be beautiful tomorrow, but today I'm getting rained on and I'm in the middle of nowhere and I don't know where, you know, I don't know when the next train's coming. But definitely I think the most depressing for me was when I realized that I didn't want to busk anymore, and that's kind of when I set my sights on going home.
The other thing I want to mention is that the train hopping stories are epics. Almost everyone I talked to had a story that had an incredible high moment, you know, like snaking along the side of a mountain where there were waterfalls on one side and rainbows on the other. But that story had started with this awful moment when they almost were dehydrated, dying of dehydration. But when people would tell me these stories, they would always end with the idea that, you know, yeah, it was terrible, but you were doing it with your friends and you had to rely on each other for survival, and that you knew each other more in a more realistic way in a few days traveling together than you would of years and years of casual contact in school or at work. So there was this electricity about the intensity of the experience that was part of the draw.
But Marissa, I guess I'm wondering, do you understand the anger? There was a lot of tears shed over the 8 who were killed in New Orleans, but there was also anger expressed. I'm thinking of the cop who talked to your mom, and these are cops that, you know, had to retrieve the charred bodies from the warehouse. And he said, here's my question. Is it really so bad where you come from that this is better than that? Is it really that bad? And can you understand the anger of people who may not care what you do, you know, in your life? Go ahead and do it, but don't break my heart by getting killed in a warehouse.
I can understand that anger. I mean, we were all pretty brokenhearted over it. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 8 lives.
That's why
eight
there's lives. Not much to say. But yeah. I mean, when you ask that question, it is very specific to, you know, one person. Like, I could say that, of course, I love my mom and my dad. My home life was great. You know, nothing too bad went on that I wouldn't come back home to. But I couldn't say that that's the same for everybody, and everyone has a different story, and it's, you can't just discriminate an entire group of people by saying that they're all rich kids or they're all from middle-class families or all of their lives are great. Yeah. There was turmoil in my family too, so
yes.
I mean, it's unfair to judge people, a group of people as a whole instead of individually. I mean, I'm sure that anybody would say that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, when you see kids on the street panhandling and they're dressed in this way, you know, they just snarl. And I know I did at one point too, and think of them as, you know, these rich kids who could be doing differently with their lives, and why don't they take a bath, and how come they don't go to school? But that's actually not recognizing exactly what Marissa's saying, which is that there are many roads that lead to the attraction to this kind of life.
And the other thing is, when I was being snarled at, I was snarling back, so.
Well, I just want to thank you both. Daniel Morton's story about a terrible fire in New Orleans that killed 8 young travelers, as they're called, appears in the Boston Review. There's a link at herenow.org. We've also been speaking to her daughter, Marissa Spohr, who has been a traveler. Danielle, Marissa, thank you both so much.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I've been sitting on your windowsill in the daytime.
By the way, Marissa talked about her music. This is one of her songs. It's called Windowsill. And we want to hear from you. Do you know this life? Maybe have a child in it? Or maybe does it make you angry that kids are taking this risk? College kids take risks, too. We'd love to hear from you. HereAndNow.org. News is next. Here and Now.
It's getting colder and I feel a chill in the nighttime.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced, and by Harvard University, whose Harvard Extension School has online and on-campus courses for students around the world, extension.harvard.edu. And by the Institute of Contemporary Art Boston, with Isaac Julian's 10,000 Waves, a 9-screen video installation featuring Maggie Chung, icaboston.org.